Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of spring deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save big today on new arrivals from Kate Spade New York, Nike, Sam Edelman, Free People, and Madewell, starting at only $30. Great brands and great prices on dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and more. So rack your look and get first dibs on spring styles you want now from just $30 at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Let me tell you a little bit about BetOnline. It remains your number one spot for NBA, MLB, MMA, boxing. It doesn't matter. Every single prop, every single play, every single point, it's all at BetOnline. When it comes to bets, when it comes to props, everything that you need is at your headquarters for sports betting. That's BetOnline. Head to the website right now. Use your mobile device. Sign up. Get a 50% welcome bonus. Don't forget to use the promo code BLEAV. That's BLEAV to get yourself a 50% welcome bonus. Come on. There's no need to hesitate. BetOnline, where the game starts.
I understand it's not something comfortable to talk about, like your sexual function or your sexual performance, but don't sell yourself short. It is important. But you know what else is kind of important? Not being totally embarrassed by going to a pharmacy or having to deal with a doctor when you're talking about prescriptions with some of these drugs to help you perform up to snuff in the bedroom. That's where Blue Chew comes in, okay? It is the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis at a fraction of the price. And the best part is you don't have to deal with anybody. It comes right to your door. You're never, ever going to be as happy as you are now to see the postman coming when you know that the package for your package is right there. All thanks to Blue Chew. Do yourself a favor. Head to bluechew.com. Use the promo code LIKES. Get your first month for free and see what I'm talking about. Because you deserve to have the best sex of your life. And thank you, Blue Chew, for sponsoring this podcast.
I hope you're ready to have your mind blown with the greatest health and fitness information on the planet.
Yes, bitch!
All right, it is the Mikey Likes You podcast, the greatest health and fitness podcast on the planet. I'm the Mikey who likes you are you who is liked. Very simple equation. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be very honest. People achieve great things in the world, and I'm not one of those people. So I've gotten kind of accustomed to just being comfortable in my position next to people who are achievers. But I'm beautiful, you know, and I haven't really gotten that used to being next to men who are as beautiful, if not more, than me. And my guest is certainly that in spades. I'm talking about one of, unarguably, the greatest grapplers on the planet right now, Nicky Rodriguez.
Thank you, thank you.
Representing the B team here in Austin, Tejas. How are you, dude?
I'm good, I'm good. Did you always know you were beautiful?
No. All kidding aside, actually, I mean, I'm not someone who, like, I'm not going to give you, like, false humility. I don't look in the mirror and go, well, that's an unattractive person. But I don't, like, feel beautiful. But I genuinely, in high school and early part of, like, what would be college age, I didn't know I was attractive to gay guys and chicks. Like, I didn't know, like, I was that, because my high school life was not that. I was such a, like, I was not a socially probably very enjoyable person to be around. I wasn't a prick, but I just was. I was kind of a loner. I certainly liked living a lifestyle that wasn't very appealing to be around. Mm-hmm. But then I got on TV. I remember pretty distinctly, like, the first time I filled in for Regis and flew out to New York, and Kelly Ripa spending the first, like, 10 minutes talking about how I must just slay the puss. Not, obviously not in those words on network TV. And and the crowd's like, woo, like all the soccer moms. And I was like, oh, this might be different. I mean, I genuinely, and because also you got to remember, I was in radio where no one sees you.
Yeah.
And I had very few female coworkers. And then the doors opened up for me. And then I was like, okay, maybe I have some leverage here.
Yeah, that's good. Me, I figured out pretty early in life, I'd go on vacation at like 10 or 12 and like chicks would ask to take pictures with me. I would like any old lady that saw me is like, oh my God, you should be in movies. Pretty much my whole life. It's crazy. High school was interesting experience as well. You know, a lot of that.
You're a really, really good looking guy. Obviously, the Thank physique you. Is there, but in person, you're one of those people that like you're actually more good looking in person because I don't think people realize how beautiful your eyes are on camera. I think there's something that they do. I'm not even joking here because you and I aren't like best buds, but we know each other a little bit. And you were nice enough to ask me to be on your podcast, and we live in this Austin area and kind of in the grappling community. So I got to see a behind the scenes with you. You are someone who definitely, I think, appreciates the ladies and understands your power, but you're not like you're not someone I would concern myself with who's gonna like throw their life away to the poontang. Definitely know those guys. How did you was it work to develop kind of the discipline to not,
you know what, first of all, I have a great family, like mom, dad, brothers, sisters. So I always knew what respect was my whole life. But also I've been training, like I started out wrestling, you know, pretty like 10, 11, 12 years old. And I always had it in my mind I would never skip training for a piece of ass.
Yeah.
So typically, like, you know, throughout my schooling, I always had a girlfriend. So I was like, if I can get laid, I will never skip practice. So I just had a chick that I could smash, keep her happy, and I would just never miss practice. So I feel if I didn't have my mind in the right direction, I'd be like more focused on getting laid as opposed to progressing my career. So I definitely always had in my mind, I was like, all right, I'll get a girlfriend. That way I never have to miss practice. And that was pretty much it for me.
It's like almost like I'll make sure I'm constantly eating healthy meals so that I don't have that.
It's about like, how healthy reps.
Like a 2 a.m., you know, fast food trip, you know, yeah. Exactly. Healthy reps. Yeah. Good quality volume.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I think a lot of people who aren't jocks or even have ever lived in physical culture, they misunderstand the real value to competitive sports, especially if you can, obviously it's great if you can be someone like you who makes a career out of it, mm-hmm. but most people are not that person. But what it does do is it really hammers home the idea of prioritizing what's important, managing time and then discipline. Cause like you said, I mean, it's kind of a fun little tangent conversation, but in reality, if it wasn't for wrestling, you might not have had that ability to kind of really identify what was important to you and be able to manage it and kind of keep it balanced. You know?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like, wrestling, lifting and stuff just kind of gave me maybe not purpose, but a balance or a structure to my lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like, did you know what you wanted to do before you were doing radio?
No. I was... I would love to say that I did. I would love to be. I have such incredible respect for Ryan Seacrest. And you could be like, well, he's a cheese dick. Fine. But Ryan Seacrest, when he was in fucking kindergarten, was like, I'm going to be the next Rick Dees. I'm going to be the next Casey Kasem. And he just went boom, 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 boom. And the guy grinds and he achieved it. And I think that that's amazing. I was not. I love radio. I love broadcasting. I love game shows and listening to Howard Stern and Kevin and Bean out in L.A. I loved it. But I never was like, oh, that I'm going to do that one day. Mm. I fell into it by accident. I wanted to be a rock star. And when I got clean, I still kind of clung to that. And I moved
back to rock star like musician.
I really, I mean, I thought it was very childish, my dream, but I really did want to do it. There was nothing of, even now, I mean, my wife has said, she's like, it's so weird to see, even when it's something so silly. Like the other day, my daughter's school had like this parent party, like parent child party to kick off the school year. And they had a karaoke thing. And I was like putting my name in four times and singing. And I was like, you know, pointing to the crowd. Ladies, you having a good time tonight? And she said, it's so crazy to see. I mean, because no one knows you better than me. And I so infrequently see you come alive like that. And I was like, oh, I'm doing what I wanted. Ever since I was a little boy, I wanted
to be. You can sing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not Freddie Mercury, but I definitely can sing better than the average person. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I have an understanding of tone and can stay on tune and stuff.
Damn, like that. That's what's up. That's a good talent. I always felt like a good mixture with my beautifulness would be the ability to sing.
Crush. Oh, or you know what would help? Like for you would be perfect? Drumming.
Drumming?
If you could drum half, like if you were competent as a drummer, because that's the shirt off muscle showing thing. Yeah. It's weird when you see a jacked guitar player.
Yeah.
Like they're supposed to be spindly. And same with the front. Like you become a weird thing. Like Danzig became a weird guy because he was fucking jacked. But drummers peel down. You could even be in your underwear.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Sitting down.
Yeah. And let that hog fly, you know?
Yeah.
Look at Tommy Lee. But I fell into it because I got when I started to want to put my life together when I was in my early 20s, I got a job at a radio station in Los Angeles as a site, like a regular person job, so that I could pay the bills because I had a bunch of these, you know, minimum wage jobs just trying to get by while I was going to build my life as, you know, the next Dave Grohl. And I, through working at the radio station, I fell into, people were like, that guy's funny. That guy certainly doesn't give a shit about doing publicly embarrassing kind of stunts. And I would do publicly embarrassing things. I would prank call the morning show, blah, blah, blah. And it just kind of fell into, I was in the right place, right time.
You did a bit of acting, right?
I have, but most of the acting I've done has either been my wife's bosses throwing me a bone because they liked me. Yeah. I would go visit my wife on set and they're like, hey, look at this guy. Why don't we make him the night watchman on the new show we're doing? Or comedian friends of mine, and like in the comic world in LA, would be like, hey, can you be a tattoo artist? Come down at 4 o'clock on Thursday. And so I like it. I think I would probably be very gratified to try to be like a real actor, like a Christian Bale. Mm-hmm. But there's a divide between me and that person in that I feel very scared. Whereas I don't feel scared at all to be, you know, like the silly guy number six on Workaholics or in the a Will Ferrell movie. If they asked me to be on a massive, big comedic movie, I wouldn't even be scared. I'd be like, yeah, let's go. Let's fuck around. Let's dick around. Mm-hmm. If they asked me at all to try to be serious about something, I would want to do it. It would be very gratifying. I'm very scared to put myself out there like that.
Oh, I see. I always contemplate taking like acting classes because I feel like I could do it, I think it's just a good something to have in my pocket. Like maybe if I took a few acting classes, it might help with just like YouTube content and stuff. Maybe I could like,
for sure,
you know, just better at talking in different ways.
Well, how many in your career, how many attorneys or accountants have you trained with where they're like, I know I'll never be Hoyler Gracie, but this is helping me in my job. When I'm on trial and things go bad, this gives me composure when things are, you know, I'm sure there's a ton of people who grapple for that reason. Mm-hmm. I cannot see any downside to, because that's the most embarrassing, weird, awkward situation. And if you can push through that.
Acting is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, and I know musicians are out there and physical artists are there. You don't understand. No, I do. Mm-hmm. because even if you're singing a song, you can hide behind the power of the amps or turn around from the. If you're a guitar player, you may suck. It doesn't matter. The overall kind of bombastic nature of it, even in like folk music, you can hide behind stuff. To cry because you're pretending to be a child that was molested and now is in therapy as a grown up. You are so fucking exposed, and there's a bunch of other adults that you don't know watching you, and they're like, go, action. If you can push through that, regardless how good you or bad you are, if you can get past that, you can really kill things.
You think some of those high end actors like have a problem like finding themselves, like knowing who they are, or is it just easy for them to shut it off?
I don't know. I think we talked about it when I came on your podcast, is that I thought about that when you. One thing that I really realized growing up, I'm an old guy now. You know, I have a sense of nobility at 44. I'm not as noble as someone who's 74, but I've been around the block enough to kind of piece together certain things. I certainly don't have it all figured out. But one thing I can really dig my heels in is that part of becoming a content adult, a responsible adult, is understanding identity. Because when you're young, that is so confusing. Understanding the identity of other people is this weird world, but even just understanding who you really are, what makes you happy, what doesn't, what makes you satisfied, what doesn't, what thrills you, what doesn't, and piecing together what it is, and not falling into the trap of trying to be like other people who are doing it the way you want to do it, right? Mm-hmm. If you devote all day, every day to playing pretend, how hard must it be to know who you really are? And maybe professional, and my wife says it's not a problem because you realize you're at work and then you're not at work. But I don't know. Maybe, like I said, maybe real actors are out there listening to this going, shut the fuck up, dude. Yeah. When you're working, you're working. You know, is it hard for you to literally play pretend death with your buddies? And then when you're off the mats, is it hard to get back into like, oh, you're my friend, I just tried to kill you?
Well, that's a good question. So I would say in training, I always train train pretty aggressively, but I don't train to hurt or injure.
Yeah.
So I have the ability to train hard, but understand that these are my training partners. These are my friends. So, you know, you hold submission. You don't like try to break them. But man, in competition, I feel like that's really me because you grapple a little bit differently when you don't care about your opponent's well-being.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like maybe the collar tie has a little bit more. When you're putting an arm bar on, you're not doing it slow. You're breaking it. You know what I mean? So, it's pretty easy for me just because like I really enjoy practice. And I understand that if I hurt my training partners, my friends, and you know, there is no more practice. Yeah. So, that part's pretty simple. But I do feel like the real me comes out when I compete because I'm not much of a talker.
Yeah.
I'm more of a doer, and I can do a lot when I have just one man standing in front of me, you know?
We were talking before we got started that, you know, you've really developed an amazing presence online with not just you, but the whole B team really has. And I love your guys' presence, and I think you guys are being very authentic, and it's really interesting to watch, you know, the kind of the comedic spin on things. But you have been, because I don't see you as someone who like genuinely wants to be a shit talker or promote their abilities on the mats with their mouth. Mm-hmm. But you've kind of been dragged into it, you know, with some of your most prominent competitors.
Specifically with my I pretty much have a life enemy, and his name's Gordon Ryan, yeah. Right? He's and I have to beat him in all aspects, not just jiu-jitsu. I have to beat him in wealth, in long-term health, and in long-term happiness as well. That would make me have to win in all aspects, right? And yeah, I'm not much of a shit talker, but when I hit hard,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, I think, for instance, right, I have this like Let's see, where did I start this at? You know More Plates, More Dates, right?
Uh-huh,
yeah. He did the whole drug test on me and whatnot. And
By the way, he's awesome. Yeah, guys, More Plates, More Dates. He does a great job.
Yep, so shout out Derek from More Plates, More Dates. Did my drug test, my random drug test, passed my drug test. And we had this guy, Gordon Ryan, calling me out, accusing me of doing steroids. And I just rebuttal. I was like, you know, after I had a match, I was like, oh, let's have a match. Since you're accusing me of steroids, let's have a match. And let's both pass USADA drug test before and after. And he had something like 70 or 80 Instagram stories all about me. And that warmed my heart. You know, I reply once, he replies 80, 90 times. I think that's a win. Yeah. You know what I mean? You get in this, getting under this guy's skin, and then he unfollows me and my team, has an emotional, he's an emotional guy. You know, I
met the man, and I'm not going to, even though I like you very much, I'm not going to get trapped into talking, because yeah. I met the man, and to me, he was the small time, he was very nice, but I see him not only as an emotional guy, but as an obsessive person, like almost OCD, where, like you said, you threw out that one and he's now his whole day is devoted to like, I'm going to fucking lift. I'm going to train 10 times. I'm going to post about all of it because he like almost like he couldn't let it go.
Can't let it go. That might be a partially to the tism. He caught a little bit of that early on in his life. And then let's see, I could go like I could go so many different ways with this, but yeah, I mean, pretty much we used to be you know, friends. I tried hard to like to be friendly with him when we were like training together. It's just some people don't really have much personality, and some people live on their phone, so it's hard for them to like communicate and stuff, you know. But yeah, he was nice when we were nice to each other. And but now we're at war. So it's, you know, we gotta win.
You're so successful and you're so dominant. You really are. How do you make heads or tails of the reality? Is that I'm not saying I have no fucking clue what'll happen tomorrow or anytime after. But at this point, he can objectively lay claim to being kind of the king, right?
Yeah, well, he can say whatever he wants to say, but in the reality of it, me and Gordon have a match, right? Our second grappling match on UFC Fight Pass. I break his foot. I have him in a fully locked rear naked choke as the time runs out. Mm-hmm. And then he retires. He pulls out. He's supposed to have a match against Felipe Pena. He pulls out of that match. I step up. And, you know, he has a hard time recovering, not only physically, but also mentally.
Yeah.
So it takes a mental toll on him. And then a few weeks go by and he loses like 40 pounds of muscle. And it's like, fuck, like that match that we have sends him to like a downward spiral. So you can see how invested or just how emotional he is in it. And, you know, something like me breaking his foot, me almost choking him unconscious, just sends him to a hefty downward spiral. It's really hard for him to recover. And, you know, it's because I don't have situations like that, because I am inconsistent in all aspects of my life. You know, whether that be training, nutrition, sleep, my relationships that I have on and off the mat, I'm uber consistent with all those things. That's what makes me much more well-rounded and just a all-around better grappler. So this guy has, you know, has his faults here and there. And, you know, I know that I outwork these guys. That's why consistency wins, in my opinion, and I'm very consistent.
I've hammered that home so much, even just in a purely like a fitness sense, is like every dude that DMs me or signs up at my Patreon, they're all looking for this like elaborate, perfect routine, this newfangled, perfect diet that's going to get. And I said, honestly, just be consistent with like stuff that has the semblance of being good. Mm-hmm. It's way more important than 2.5 weeks of your like amazing over the top bodybuilder program. If you were to just have these foundational tenets that you just hit for years and years and years, everything will work out in the end, you know?
I can definitely agree with that. I feel like some people, they want to get like fit now. They're like, oh, I want to get in shape for summer. I want to have abs for on this date. And it's like, you know, if you make small changes to adjust their lifestyle, then it just becomes their everyday routine. And you have those goals over a long period of time, and you can sustain that physique or whatever that specific goal you have for, you know, longer duration.
I had a guy message me the other day, saying, I didn't work with him personally, but he just was a fan of the podcast and I really appreciated it. But he showed me pictures of like this amazing transformation. He looked great. And he said, I just gave up on trying to eat and train for results. And I started to eat and train to kind of please my soul. Mm-hmm. I stopped eating foods that I knew were going to make me tired and feel bloated. And I started eating foods that I knew made me feel better. And I didn't look at it as like, this is bad, this is good. I know this is good for me. This is bad for me. You know, yeah. I knew that like, I may not like squatting, but I got chicken legs. And like, so I started just doing what I knew was going to be good and fulfilling. And everything started working out because I stopped having to like overly regulate things of this good, this bad, you know?
Yeah, I think you can. I think people should associate just exercise with happiness, with longevity, not so much just like your immediate goals. I just feel like if you go to the gym and you're like, oh, this is going to be a positive experience. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to get a sick pump, going to improve my life in some way. And it just makes it easier. It's not so like you're not stuck in that grind so much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's incredibly good advice. One thing that I really respect about you, and I didn't know this until as just like an outsider, as just a fan. But then when I went over your place and I did your podcast and got a little bit of a behind the scenes look, is that you claim to be very committed in all aspects of your life. You're very committed in all aspects of your life. You're not just this very one-dimensional person. I did the podcast with you and you messaged me 10 times trying to get my opinion on tips that you could use in broadcasting. If I had any critiques you wanted to know, you were very open-minded and you were like engaged and really very driven to not just, hey, I've gotten some fame in the grappling world, so I'm going to do a podcast. Seems like an easy revenue stream. No, you wanted to make a really good podcast. And I was very impressed by that.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I do. I'm a fan of long-term goals. So like, you know, if I can get like it's in this world, you're a black belt. You know what I mean? I would consider you an expert in radio and podcast. So, you know, if you could give me any advice, man, I take it and, you know, and roll with it. Cause I'm new to the podcast game. You know, I got to figure out kind of my cadence, how I like to speak, how I want people to perceive me, without being too unauthentic, yeah. You know? So
honestly, and that was one of the things I hammered home to you in this gig, not like traditional television, but like broadcasting. It's all about the person listening or watching. If they get the sense that the person they're listening to or watching is exactly the same person when that mic or that camera turns off, that is what transcends. That is what like will give you that. And the person who's putting on a character can have huge success for a time, but it never lasts.
And then when you meet people in person, they expect that character. And it's like, it's probably draining, right?
That's what we're seeing now with Ellen DeGeneres. Like her career's over all because no one was better at pretending to be everybody's best friend. You watched her at 3 o'clock and every like mom or every viewer, they're like, oh, Ellen really does want to dance and have fun with me. And people got the news that like, maybe that's not the case. It's all over. David Letterman, on the other hand, from day one was like, I don't like you. I don't like this job. I don't like, but hey, here we go. All right. Who's my guest tonight? I don't care. And that's why, because he was so good on top of that, he carried in. Bill Maher's the same way. Bill Maher's never made any apologies for being a smug prick. He's like, I'm a smug prick, but I'm really good at my job. Would you like to watch me do it? You know?
Are those two guys that you like kind of watch and you're like, oh, I can kind of watch for inspiration, I guess, when you're trying to get better?
Yeah, there's definitely people like I looked at, especially when I was like trying to build a life and a career. And once I really made the realization that I wasn't going to be a rock star, that I was, hey, I could have a life being a broadcaster. Kevin and Bean, who I was personally working with, absolutely. I was watching them all the time, and they're two completely different people. And I watched how they really embraced that they were two completely different people. Kevin's an overgrown frat guy. He loves it. Party time, Vegas on the weekends. Bean is this weird intellectual, and they both let it, like, were putting it out there. And then there were the people that I saw who not only were really authentic and really good at their job, like Adam Carolla, But the people who would sneak in through the back door, who also didn't play the game and still managed to make it, Trey and Matt from South Park, Johnny Knoxville. Johnny Knoxville has a huge show business career by being a stuntman who wrote for a skateboarding magazine.
Yeah.
But he was just good at it and people liked him and he grinded and he figured out ways to be. I love that. I think that's so impressive in my opinion.
I grew up in that Jackass era. That was when that was on TV. I was watching.
And you were probably like, how old are you?
I'm 26.
Oh my God. You're so young. And I mean that as a compliment. I mean, like the fact that you're so driven and disciplined at that age is the sky's the limit. But you ever roll with someone who's like 16 and they're technically really good, but you're like, when you get man strength, you're going to be, when you get to be my age and things that don't matter really start to not matter. Mm-hmm. And you have this level of drive and talent, you're going to be a really happy man. It's a weird thing. Because, especially in this country, especially for dudes, you put so much value on your achievements. But then slowly, these things start to come into your life that you realize, like with seismic force, it hits you. You go, whoa, this is going to matter so much more when I'm looking at death in the eyes. And I'm hopefully an old man on a gurney somewhere and I'm like, fuck, I may have a day to live. I'm really not going to care how many followers I had or how much money I made. I'm like, you have a kid and you look in their eyes, you're like, this matters. Mm-hmm. You know, or like your wife's fucking bitching at you because you did something, not something crazy, you know, like cheating on your wife. I'm talking about like you and your wife are having an argument and she's busting your balls and you internally are like, why are you fucking with me? I don't think this is my shit.
Yeah.
And you go and you sit alone, you're like, well, let me be introspective here and really see where my wife's coming from because this matters. And also even in a professional capacity, I'm not saying don't try to be successful, but you'll start to measure like, well, what is what I'm doing right now mean to the world? Mm-hmm. Above and beyond what it means to my paycheck. Am I adding positive to the world or am I a shit poster that's getting $80,000 a month to be a fucking asshole? You when it's 26, you're 26, it's pretty hard because you go like, I'm successful. I work really hard and I'm becoming successful because of that. I don't see the problem. You start to get a little older and you start to realize like, well, yeah, but is this going to make my soul wealthy? Mm. You know, and I know that sounds so corny and Oprah, but
I think I know what makes me happy. I like adrenaline. I like establishing dominance. I like a clean house.
Yeah.
Nice dog. Good family.
Clean house, nice dog is pretty hard to argue with.
Yeah, right. It's simple.
Things aren't adding up and you're like a dog will come up and you're like, woo, woo. You're like, wow, that's awesome. This is good.
Yeah.
This is like the best antidepressant there is.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, you commonly make jokes about being a dumb meathead, but you're not a dumb meathead.
I'm a meathead for sure.
You're awesome.
I love my protein.
I love it. I eat almost nothing but protein and I love to lift weights.
Yeah.
But you're not a dumb guy and you couldn't be as good at what you do if you were dumb. Are you like going to crush on Jeopardy? Probably not, because you don't spend a lot of time collecting information.
Well, I'm more of the Price is Right kind of guy.
Yeah, you're right. Probably get hammered.
Yeah.
But your brain functions well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the example I always like to give is like, there's different. When you talk about people who are dumb, you're talking about a low intellectual capacity. Mm-hmm. Because some people go to Ivy League schools and have collected a lot of information. They're not necessarily very smart. Donald Trump, on the other hand, I would not put any money on him to win on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Because he just does. He's like, what? You could see it. Sometimes he'd be like, what are we talking about in this debate? Like as he's walking out there. But as far as how well his brain functions, it's pretty fucking high.
Yeah. And my dad always told me there's a big difference between between people that can read books
yeah.
and understand books and like street smarts, you know, or common sense, you know, so got to have a bit of both.
Do you find yourself having emotional intelligence?
Oh, emotional intelligence. First of all, how do you define emotional intelligence? Like, I have the ability to control emotions. Like, maybe so much so that I shut them off when I'm supposed to be emotional. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm supposed to feel something now, but I don't.
Well, maybe. I don't. It is hard to define. It's a good question. I think someone who can be in touch, recognize that they're having certain emotions when you're really, really sad. A lot of people, they won't even intellectually realize that they're so sad and depressed. Some people are so over the top excited about something and they don't even see the bipolarity to their behavior. And then there's the recognition of it, and then there's like the regulation of it. Like, sometimes I get so excited about something. For instance, no one likes pussy more than me. It's impossible.
How do you measure that?
It's impossible to measure the amount. Do you know how impossible it is to measure how beautiful you are, especially with your shirt off right now? I have stopped working out because there's hot chicks at the gym, because I was like, I have to go beat off.
Oh, yeah.
And if there's not, yoga was off the table, especially in Venice, Santa Monica, Venice, because it would just be the Playboy Mansion of girls putting their ass in the air. And I was like, I have to leave.
Damn.
But I go, I'm not a lion on the plains, and I regulate that. I understand that I can sit there on Instagram and look at Brazilian girls who squat in their Lululemon all day. Mm-hmm. But I go, I'm a married man, and I'm very sexually content, and I'm very in love, and I control that. You know, that I look
you
at that
time. By masturbation?
Sometimes.
Yeah, for me, if my balls are empty, bro, I'm productive.
I've always thought about how we should encourage emptying balls before any major decision, because most every really irrational thing I've ever done was for poon. You know?
Can't miss training for a piece of ass, bro. You got to get it done before.
Mike Tyson said, pussy's undefeated. If you think about how many guys have destroyed their lives over drugs, gambling, alcohol, it's tenfold for poon.
Correct. Right?
So be careful, young men out there.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about this the other day. Do you think lesbians have that same, like, if you're
there's no testosterone.
Yeah.
They got estrogen, right?
And gay guys, I mean, maybe if you're in like a small town, but most gay guys, at least that I knew, especially in like LA or San Francisco, they don't have that same problem, because they can fuck when, like, they genuinely can fuck whenever they want, you know, because it's other guys. So it's just the straight guys that I guess.
It's tough out there if you're a dude, you know. Sometimes
I think we should legalize prostitution for that reason and reason alone.
Probably because make it safer for some of the ladies.
A lot of these dudes, especially, and I hate to bring up such a dark topic, but whenever they do like the reverse engineering of like a mass shooter, it's always these like incel dudes, and it's always these guys who are really upset at society. And I was like, if they could just have a reasonably hot chick, even if they had to pay for it.
That personal clarity. It'd be like, why would I show up to the school? I just came.
I kill people. What am I doing? Life is so good.
Or they won prison because they won all the dudes.
That'd be sick.
It's a balance.
That would be. That was my first exposure to like pseudo canceling. I was on E! News. And there was a story about Adam Lambert. You know the singer Adam Lambert?
Mm-hmm.
He like assaulted a paparazzi guy. He like smacked the camera out or anything. And the story was that he might be facing jail time from this. And I go, well, from what I know about Adam Lambert, that's not the worst punishment to be locked up with a bunch of dudes, right? Yeah. Super boneheaded, low hanging fruit joke. Oh my God.
Get some feedback.
Oh, dude. There was, and this is like 2012, way before like canceling me. Oh, my Twitter feed was nothing but people like, you homophobic. I was like, come on.
I don't think that's homophobic.
That's what I said.
It's homo positivity. If anything, he's getting what he wants.
I really genuinely looked at it that way, whereas I would never feel comfortable. I don't know of ever meeting a Palestinian person, right? Mm. So when people start going into Israel-Palestine stuff, I go like, I would love to give you my opinion. I'm not going to make any jokes. But I was raised around tons of gay people, black people, Asian people, Hispanic people in L.A. And so everyone seems very – I feel very comfortable talking shit because that's – there's a relaxation there, which I think exposes the fact that there's a comfort level because it just seems normal to me. As many people would say, well, you don't want to heteronormalize things because there's people – I go like, well, I'm not because – guess what I do to all my hetero friends? I talk shit. Mm-hmm. And we make fun of each other. And I always felt like there was some level of connection there. But not a lot of people see it, especially from the offended groups. They don't see it that way.
I met a Palestinian once, I think when I was in Chicago. And I was asking him, because I know like some of them, they have like cultural beefs, right?
Sure.
And I was like, hey, do you feed into like, do you have a beef with like any other culture, like, you know, Israeli or something like that? He was like, no, honestly, like since I come into the U.S., like I see everything for what it is, you know, that stays over there on that side of the world. And I really don't have any hate or animosity towards anybody, but Israelis, they're the devil.
I was like, all right, bro. Any hate for like, anyone, but let me be clear.
Yeah.
The Jews are.
Yeah. Caught me off guard. I was like, all right.
He buttoned it with that. Yeah. I get so many questions and I'm nowhere near as good at either, but I get so many questions from people who are aspiring grapplers who also want to be buff. Mm. And they go, how do you balance the two? I go, it's a game.
You know, jiu-jitsu is pretty much counteractive towards your gains because you're doing an hour of cardio every day, which is like, that's not what your muscle wants.
An hour of varied intensity. Like sometimes it's really pushing and sometimes, and you know, and people, a lot of people who, and I'm not talking shit, I think this is just a common misbelief. People see sweating and movement and they're like, well, this is going to be good for having a good body. And it's like, well, no. It's very specific kind of to what you're looking for. Yeah. You know?
I tell people too, because a lot of people ask me about like lifting weights and whatnot. And I tell them, you have to establish your goal. Do you want to be strong? Do you want to look good? Because it's two very different things. So you can lift like a power lifter and be crazy strong, but not look good at all.
Right.
Or you could lift like a bodybuilder and, you know, still get stronger, but have a great physique. So you have to establish your goals and then go from there. For me personally, I built this physique. It took me like 7 or 8 years of bodybuilding style workouts. And now I feel like I just have to keep it, I just maintain, you know, I do a lot more cardiovascular based lifts, like some CrossFit style stuff, because I'm more interested in endurance nowadays. But to keep the muscle mass, just keep eating the good food. And yeah, bro, once you get the muscle naturally, you just pretty much keep it, right? It doesn't go away.
There, that people have a hard time, especially chicks. I have a hard time explaining to them. I was like, if you want to have a great body for a long time, there's nothing you can do that's more effective than getting some muscle.
Yeah.
You know, and skinny fat guys who are out there, they want to look lean. And so they're like, I'm going to go run 10 miles. I was like, listen,
do some curls.
The best thing you can do for longevity, for your health, for wanting to get lean, is like actually have some considerable muscle on it. Not everybody needs to have your level, but having some actual horsepower takes you in so many different directions and puts you ahead of the game.
I agree. Like even gaining like 10 pounds of muscle, which is very doable, especially if you go from not lifting to lifting weights.
And you're young. Yeah.
And you're young. Yeah. Something common I see nowadays too is like you'll take a kid like out of high school and is, you know, early 20s and he's never touched weights. Right. And he goes right to lifting weights, eating lots of protein and doing steroids. And there's like, wow, look at these results. And it's like, bro, if you just did the weights, the food, you would have extreme results, like without the gear and, you know, some of the health risks, which, you know, if you do steroids, it is what it is. It's not, you know, I don't care either way, but I would prefer that especially the young guys take a couple years, even 6 months, lift properly every day, eat your body weight in protein every day for 6 months and watch the results. And then if you're like, oh, I'm not making any progress, which is impossible. If you are doing your body weight in protein, you are lifting like a bodybuilder, maybe 5 to 6 times a week, you're going to make massive gains.
Especially if, and to circle back, if you do it consistently.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of young guys will go ham for 2 days a week here, 4 days a week next week, 0 days the week after that. You know, yeah. Especially in summer, you're like chicks and beer. And
yeah, bro, even like 30-minute lifts. Like I was the king of like 25, 30-minute lifts. And, you know, on the days that I felt like I really didn't want to work out, I would just do what I love most and be biceps. Yeah. And 20, 30 minutes of biceps would get you fucking yoked.
Well, it will, especially if you're expending as many calories as you are.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it is different for a regular person because you're doing 30 minutes of biceps in between probably your 2 or 3 training sessions a day where you're.
Oh, well, you know, when I was first making like bodybuilding gains, it was off season. So I remember I lost in the NCAA, I lost in high school state tournament. I lost my last match. And I felt like I lost because I was weaker than my opponent. Mm-hmm. So I go home, I watch movie Pain and Gain with, you know, Mark Wahlberg, The Rock. I was like, it's time. I immediately, next day, I start lifting weights at my high school and I start watching all the YouTube videos, you know, all the free bodybuilding content. I consumed it about the food, about the way to lift. And I started and I was like, I'm not going to stop this till I get the physique that I want. I'm still lifting till this day. So yeah, I mean, you don't even need a trainer. Some of these guys think they need like, you know, trainers to lift. Bro, go watch a YouTube video. You can figure it out.
It's the best worst thing that ever happened to the fitness culture because like you said, when I was in high school, that was not an option.
No, yeah.
I had to go to a fucking, once I made the decision to really care about it, I had to transition from Flex magazine and all that shit to literally going to the library and seeing books and kind of like identifying the ones that had, and I after a couple of times I went to a bookstore and had a special order because I started realizing through these books they were always referencing Super Training by Mel Siff and taking information from the Soviets, and it was like at that point it was like a 20-year-old book. So it's got to be 40, 50 years old now. And I had to have special ordered at a Barnes & Noble in Pasadena. Then I went and bought that. Then I read it cover to cover. Half the shit didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand anaerobic output and speed strength versus strength speed. And but I kept going and kept going and coming up. And there was these little nuggets that would say, and it's like training for strength, 3 to 5 reps, you know, 50% one rep maximum for speed work. You know, blah, blah, 10 reps. Hypertrophy, 15 to 20 reps. I'm like, okay, now we're talking.
And that's like, my style. I like the hypertrophy training. I think it gives you a sick pump and you don't need a lot. Like I could grab a 10-pound dumbbell and fucking get a crazy workout in.
I've noticed from you, your best friend, Gordon Ryan, and other jacked grapplers in the world who are both really buff and then also really successful, you know, Andre Galvao and then Cyborg Abreu. Like there is a real connection to higher rep range, you know, more strength endurance work. And it makes a lot of sense. A, because how useful is it to elevate a guy one time and then be gassed as opposed to being able to elevate 75% of a guy's body weight 30 times, you know, as far as like a 6-minute match.
And it's the same concept, bro. It's Jordan in the fourth quarter. Yeah. You know, you gotta know how to press on the gas when the guy's getting tired.
How did you ever encounter that problem though? Where, you know, I certainly did when Orlando Sanchez got into jiu-jitsu with Alberto Crane. And he's like, bro, you gotta come with me. And started. I was like, all right. And at that time, I was powerlifting and bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. I was 205 pounds at this frame.
What do you weigh now?
170.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're way bigger.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
were you pretty lean, too?
Yeah, not as lean as I am now, but reasonably. Like, top 4 abs. Lean, yeah. You know? Tons of steroids.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, look, let's do it. And certainly, especially as like a no experienced white belt, I would get so tired. So I would get tired shrimping, you know, warming up. I'd be like, I could. But I said, but wait, I just watched Hamilo Barral and Orlando lift weights. How come they're not? And it took me a lot of time to realize, like, there's a it's dose dependent, right? Mm-hmm. Strength, endurance, muscle mass in general, like to the body frame. I had to really understand like what's useful for that capacity and what's not. And I wonder if you ever, was there, once you saw Pain and Gain and you're like, let's do this, was there ever a moment where you're like, okay, maybe I've gone a little bit too overboard because now I can hardly keep up with wrestling training?
You know, I was, so when I was lifting weights, it was off season, you know, after wrestling season. But while I was lifting, I always had in my mind, like, this is for so I can get better at wrestling. So instinctively, I always went with the higher reps. I saw everybody doing like, you know, three sets of 10 or 12. I was like, all right, I'm going to do four sets of like 15 to 20 because it's got to be better than everybody else. And then I started watching guys like Rich Piana. RIP, rest in peace. Yep. But, you know, he kind of broke it to people. It was like, listen, like, he told people the truth, like, you know, he's on gear or whatever, but you can get crazy results if you lift the way I lift. So, you know, I kind of took that to heart, and the food stuff too. You know, he was real big on nutrition, and mm-hmm. maybe didn't eat the cleanest, but probably ate the most, yeah. You know, most protein and stuff. So I clung to that just because I felt like he was authentic when he was talking. And, you know, I saw the reps. You know, you see the massive arms. You're like, oh, this guy's doing, you know, 30 reps of skull crushers. And it's like, all right, like I can, this is hard workout. And there's no way that I won't get bigger if I eat the food and I do the work.
You were always naturally pretty lean and muscular, though.
Yeah.
Even before you started lifting?
Yeah, before I started lifting, just because like wrestling, well, I have great genetics, but yeah. Wrestling enhanced a little bit because I'm moving people around. So even before I picked up weights, I was pretty strong.
And those are my next questions. Like, have you been able to see, because I certainly have, there's some people who look like Adonis, and then you get out on the mats with them, and I'm like, I just double leg that guy, and I suck. I knew a dude. This gnarly ass Armenian guy, fucking man tits, belly, but he was a judo guy for a long time. An older guy too. I was probably 30. He was like in his 50s. Mm. Looked like shit. Like if you saw him at the beach, you'd be like, this guy, he was a gorilla.
Yeah.
And I he said, bro, I do gi pull-ups, the chin-ups, my gi, bro. I do Hindu push-ups every day. And he's like, I was like, you know, live it. Any weights? He's like, no, I do. I was like, what are your grips? He's like, I tell you, bro, I do the gi pull-ups. And he did, and he would put me in, like, he would get on top of me just in side control, and I'd want to tap.
Yeah.
And he was a fucking animal.
Those Dagestanis or anybody that has chest hair that connects to their back hair,
yeah,
as a strong person.
You're done. Yeah. Well, I mean, here's a perfect example. If you brought Khabib Nurmagomedov in here right now. Mm-hmm. I'll go in a gym. I'll destroy him in everything. There's no exercise where I wouldn't do way more reps and way more weight. If he was like my friend, we do a little grab. He would fucking pick me up, carry me around,
yeah.
Be talking to you guys as he slammed me, be like, what submission I do? So like there is a strength component where there's some kind of weird abstract thing in
it. I think you have to know how to use it. Like, you know, I experienced it probably the most when I was in college, when we would lift as a wrestling team, and I see these guys putting up crazy numbers, and then I would just be able to control these guys on the mat all day. And you know, I use it differently. I'm much stronger on the mat than I am in the gym. And yeah, I think that just comes with years of grappling. You know how to move people. Also angles, like if somebody's pushing into you, you know, is it easier to make him go the opposite direction or just make him go faster in the same direction?
It's, yeah, you're right. Cause I remember Dustin Poirier talking about fighting Khabib, and it might've been Rogan. Someone was interviewing him. They're like, is he just so crazy strong? He's like, no, I mean, he's strong, but I'm strong. Everyone I fight is strong. We were talking about the UFC. It was that these minuscule adjustments he would make that just made me feel completely inept. You know, he just understood leverage and balance so much better than most people. Do you worry though that, and you got, I mean, 20 years before, this is 15 years before this is an issue, but your game is so explosive. I mean, to the point that sometimes you'll put up highlight clips where I'm like, I wonder if he feels bad about putting this up because you literally ragdoll fucking people. Mm. But do you worry that that won't be sustainable for, I mean, when you're my age, will you be able to do that?
That's a good question. I think like sometimes because people ask me, they're like, oh, you're so explosive, so strong, so fast, so good looking.
Yeah.
Like I can't.
You're so well hung. Right.
Yeah. But I don't see my game as like explosive. I think I'm very fast, but I see it as me making the correct decisions at the perfect time. I think a lot of jiu-jitsu, right, you have to have the knowledge first of all, but what's equally as important as the knowledge is the timing in which you do it. Like think of a foot sweep. Foot sweep doesn't take, a baby could foot sweep a grown adult, you know what I mean? I'm being a bit dramatic, but timing is everything. So if I can keep my timing, then I feel as if I can keep this athleticism, the explosiveness per se for a long duration.
So much of defense, I'm realizing too, is timing. Like I've tried my best to get more adventurous at hunting for submissions, because going from the day I started to like the middle of my blue belt, almost exclusively training with Orlando. Oh, I didn't.
It's gotta be terrible.
It was just survive.
Yeah.
I really didn't develop much submission game because I was not submitting him unless he literally technically let me and I was just giving me advice. But I've tried to really, like, that's my thing now. It's like, I don't care if people pass, if people beat me because of it, but I'm going to start getting adventurous, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've realized the guys who have the best ability to not get submitted is that they understand that exact moment when they're going to elevate their hips in a triangle or to turn, you know what I'm saying? Like there's just like that one split second where they could feel it's time to pull their arm and attempt an arm bar.
I think it's important to practice both like early defense and then late escapes as well. Like I'm sure, did you watch my tournament where I had that like crazy armbar escape?
Yeah.
So like that's all about, you know, timing, angles, and you know, putting yourself in the correct position so you can go thumb down and escape. But preemptively, like the preference would be to have an early defense where he isn't even able to, my arm doesn't get extended. Like you saw with Wagner, when I had a match against Wagner Rocha. Yeah, I just stacked him. I was able to apply pressure and then limp my arm out. And that, if I can do that every match, that'd be great. But not only do I have the early defense, I also have the late defense. So when we get in those sticky situations, I know exactly what to do.
Have you ever been, or are you ever still, scared?
Scared? No. Well, like of competing or
in those either prior to or during, do you get, do you deal with that?
Not scared at all, but I'll get a bit of anxiety before, like weeks prior to the competition, like pretty much the day I'm like, I sign a contract. I'm like, all right, it's real. I'm going to do this. Yeah. And I'll deal with anxiety early on. And I'll do that by, I'll put myself like mentally when I'm in practice, I'll put myself in that competition. I'll envision the crowd. I'll envision my opponent in front of me stepping on the mat, the music playing, shaking his hand and it being go time. And I accept all consequences. Every avenue that could go, I say it is what it is. If I fucking die out there, I'll die out there. It doesn't matter. I'll go out there and I'll give my best shot. And, you know, because of my training, because of what I do, I know that I'm going to beat this guy or multiple opponents. So for me, I deal with anxiety very early on. But when it comes to go time, like, my little brother J-Rod told me something that make perfect sense. It was like, it's okay to be nervous, have butterflies, as long as you can get them to fly in formation.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's good.
Sick quote.
Hey, how old's your brother? 20, come up with that shit.
21, 22.
Good for him.
Yeah. So
he's probably slaying the puss too.
He's recently single. So a lady set up J-Rod on Instagram.
You and Giancarlo both. Giancarlo Bodini. He has a little twin too.
Does
like
he,
a little miniature him, oh, and really? He's so good looking. And I'm like, it's not fair. I ran into his, I didn't know he had a little brother. And I was like, oh shit. Like they look exactly like you really, and your brother, you know, like that's it's cool. Just like a shrunken version. Yeah, I don't like that. I really don't have a problem with like some gnarled jungle animal beating the shit out of me, but I really don't like when guys who look like you.
Is it hard to break eye contact? Is that what you're just stuck?
No, yeah. Right now, I feel very fine. But if you were to pick me up like a little baby and then slam me on my back and then immediately pass my guard and Kimura me so bad that I had to cry to my wife. Like I said, if some just like Blanca looking motherfucker does that, I go like, well, that's them's the breaks.
Yeah.
But I don't like it when guys like you. That's what it sucks about being in a Brazilian artist. There's so many good looking people that beat me up. I don't like that.
It's a tough world to live in.
Yeah, I Muay Thai was a little bit more forgiving.
Muay Thai, yeah.
It was either some gnarled ass Mexican kid or some dude who like, you know, drove a cab in Bangkok. And I was like, okay, you're a hard man. Like yeah. I look at you, I was like, that's not, let's, you know, come on. To be nice.
You know, it's not always fair.
No, it's not always fair.
No.
Let's wrap things up with this. 15, 16 years old, right? Mm. Young man, young woman. And you're seeing this explosion of submission grappling. You're seeing it in your Instagram feed. You're watching it on YouTube, whatever it may be, TikTok. And you're like, I want to do that. It's the best advice you can give them.
For somebody 15, 16.
Or just in a formative age.
You know, and they want to be a professional.
Make a decision.
And they want to be a professional.
They think they can do it and they really want it.
Okay. I say, first off, make the decision that you don't just want to be good. You don't want to be great. Try to be the best in the world. It's like what they say, you know, if you aim for the moon, you fucking land in the stars.
Hit a star.
Whatever. Yeah. So try to be the best version of yourself, but try to be the best in the world, especially at your weight class. That'll help you kind of kickstart things. All right. And then more simply, find the best training in your area. Now, once you get a gym that you like and that you're not just smashing everybody at, go there, train consistently, become the best guy in the room. And then you have to keep moving up the ranks through the room, right? If you're killing everybody in one room, find a different room where you're not the best guy, and keep moving up until you eventually find, you know, maybe the best gym in the world. Come to B Team Jiu-Jitsu, you want to be great. If you really want to be excellent in this sport, train every single day. I don't mean like, you know, weekdays. I mean 7 days a week. Train, lift weights, eat right, get your sleep. Sleep is so important. You got to get, you know, I lay in bed 10 to get eight hours of sleep. And sleep is something for the natural grapplers, natural athletes in the world. Sleep is your steroids, right?
Even if you're on drugs, by the way, and you're older, it's that important.
It's sleep, yeah. Like I'm sure, I don't know, maybe later on down the line I'll do some gear if I'm trying to compete at like 40 or 50, who knows. But for right now, sleep is my biggest recovery, along with the nutrition. But yeah, find the best grappling room in your area. Absorb all the knowledge. I find a common issue is you have high level wrestlers that are like finishing high school and they want to do jiu-jitsu, but they go from being like a state champ and then they have this old out of shape dude like leg locking them or something. Like, yeah. What the fuck's going on? You know, so shut the ego off. Be annoying with asking questions. Nowadays we sell instructional, so you can get the world's best technique. Link in my bio and you can study. You know what I mean? Choose a favorite grappler. The guy selling instructionals. You can learn the techniques and you can become phenomenal. Get some good training partners. And again, for me, it was always about finding the best room in the world. And I had, shout out Jay Regabuto, because that was my first jiu-jitsu coach. And in South Jersey, he pretty much brought all the best grapplers in the area. He pretty much brought them to me, to one room, and we would train together consistently until I was able to pretty much afford to drive up to New York and train under John Danaher. Yeah. And then once I got the train under him, I kept sending it up to New York every day. I was driving like fucking 3 hours in one direction to go train with him. And bro, it was the best decision I ever made. So find the best room in the area, be consistent, become the best guy in that room, and then move up.
I was living in Jersey, I think, right when it kind of became a grappling. Like, you know, Jersey, the state of Jersey always had great high school wrestling. I'm talking where I started to, because I was at Rutgers at the time.
Yeah.
And I would go to the different camp and you'd see the Frankie Edgars, Martin Rooney, and the Rutgers wrestling team started to kind of fuck with people, you know, like the Penn States of the world. Mm-hmm. They weren't necessarily becoming the, but they were, you were starting to, they were starting to get recognized and respected. And, like it was really strange. And it's amazing now that like it's become this thing. Last question, because you did sum that up so well and it was really good advice. But what if, let's say you're living in a place where there is no best room? Like, I mean, there are still, we're really lucky in Austin. Mm-hmm. I was really lucky in Southern California and New York City. It's like, okay, yeah, there's places where it's like, well, this gym isn't working out. I can go find another place, even a couple hours away, like you were saying. Some places, like it, do you think that there's enough exposure with, you know, the Flow Grappling and BJJ Fanatics, all those instructionals, all the best having instructionals? Boss Rutan said that he learned jujitsu from watching videos of BJ Penn. I mean, do you think you can get to that point, or at least get to a recognizable level with just training on your own?
Well, I think yeah, you can get pretty good if you're watching the proper instructionals, you're drilling, and then you have these live situations. Whatever state you're in, especially if you're in a northern state, you probably have some good wrestlers around, whether that be college or local high school wrestlers. And if you can train with wrestlers, they'll give you a more of a realistic, like competition feel when you're grappling. And then you could drill with your lighter jiu-jitsu guys. There's a big discrepancy in the level of effort that people give, right? So mm-hmm. Jiu-jitsu guys generally a bit more lax. Wrestlers want to kill you.
Yeah.
So if you're the best guy in your room, contact some local wrestlers. Be like, come in and do some jiu-jitsu. Make friends with them. Also, like, if you don't have anybody in your area, you only have other competitors in different gyms, dude, make friends with them. Invite them to come train. Like, if you're in your early stages, these guys aren't really your competition. You know what I mean? May befriend them and stuff. And then once you get to a higher level, you're probably making a couple bucks. And maybe you can come out Austin, Texas, or come out to a different gym and test your skills.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm scared of it. I said it was my life. I definitely have one that's been burning me up inside. There's been a whole revival of these videos of regular dudes coming into gyms, like, jiu-jitsu doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then getting really fucked up. Mm-hmm. And then I saw your homie, the tall black kid. Someone tried to steal his car. That didn't go well.
What a bad decision.
Can you imagine?
Not only the worst like gym you could go to, but the worst person's car you could break into.
He did not hesitate to dismantle that human being.
Bro, so Heisem was pretty much, first of all, for the guys that don't know who Heisem Reed is, you can look him up. He's like 6'4", 6'5", 225, 230 pounds. And he's from
his body's impossible.
He's from Ghana. He's got all the athleticism that comes from Ghana. You know what I mean? So he's sleeping in B team, on the B team couch. And like one of our associates come in like, hey, is there you have a friend like digging through your car? He's like, no. So he runs out there and this guy's like walking away from his car. And, Heisem runs up to him and just like, it was like, yo, what's up? And the guy pretty much just freezes. And Heisem was like, the guy thought about running, but he understood immediately that he couldn't run away. Yeah. You know, so he pretty much just
giving the ball.
Yeah, he was just like kind of, they tussled a little bit. I think Heisem like foot swept him to the ground. It went absolutely viral on Instagram. We had like a couple million views on social media. It was great.
I love regular dudes.
Yeah.
I don't like regular dudes getting attacked. I like when regular dudes pop off.
Yeah.
And then someone just dismantles them. But never happened to you, huh? Never. You never been lucky enough to have some guy be like, you don't understand me, bro.
Yeah.
I see red when I get mad.
Well, I was a bouncer before jiu-jitsu after wrestling. Mm-hmm. And man, my first weekend I was bouncing, I was always being super polite. Like there's some bouncers that want to fight.
Enjoy it.
I was generally the guy that like trying to just be calm and stuff, you know what I mean? So I'm asking this group of college kids to please leave, you know, the fucking bar's closed. And one of them sneaks behind me and puts me in like a shitty rear naked choke, right? Yeah. So he's on my back. And the second I feel hands locked around my neck, I was loose enough where I could turn and I got chest to chest. Uh-oh. Body body lock to the ground, elbow to the face, and put him immediately in a seizure. And I was like, all right. I mean, he tried to choke me. I was in my right, you know, so.
You're like a Japanese cartoon, just giving people seizures left and
that
right.
That was it. Seized up. And then after he woke up, he didn't even know he was in a fight. And I was like, oh, dude, you slipped, bro. Like, it's all good. But yeah, that was a bit scary because it's fucking.
You could kill a guy.
Yeah, bro. It's not safe. Like, I remember, I got fucking sued one time because pretty much same situation. I'm asking this drunk guy to leave out the back, and he was totally cool until he took a step outside and he recognized he was getting like escorted out.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and fucking headbutts me in the face. Ooh. And I was like, what the fuck? So I push him.
American guy?
Oh, big boy too, like 6'4".
That's a very British or Australian thing to do, to go right to the headbutt.
To fucking headbutt me right in my forehead. And it's Halloween, right? So my face is painted like a skeleton.
Good time.
And he has a big skeleton, like paint mark on his face now because he headbutted me. Dude. So I double hand push, right? And my technique must have been great because he went up in the fucking air, landed on his head, had cracked his head, unconscious, had like 15 staples. And that's just from an open hand push. It's like, dude, it's... If guys don't know how to like fall and shit, it's super scary.
It's really nasty.
Very scary. So I'm happy.
So your homie, is Hassam, is that how you pronounce it?
Hassam.
Has he done an instructional yet?
I think he has one. I think he might have a foot sweep instructional.
Okay, listen.
Yeah.
His next one, please provide this for him. His next instructional has to be Ghana in 60 seconds.
Oh, wow. That's good. Ghana in 60
seconds. Ghana in 60. And just like. With like the Nick Cage pose, you could do that.
Bro, that's excellent.
Thanks.
Yes.
Hey, dude. I really appreciate it.
Dude, thanks for having me.
This was awesome. It was awesome. And everyone, check out B-Team in Austin if you happen to be in the Austin area. Also, Nikki has instructionals available at most kind of like high-end, you know, grappling websites. Instructionals on conditioning. Strength development, athletic ability, body locks.
Yeah, I'm known for my body lock, my Roddy locking series. You guys can check us out on YouTube, B-Team Jiu-Jitsu on YouTube. That's where we throw down. We have our content pretty much like we put a fucking TV show pretty much, you know?
Yeah, a lot of good content. And thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. My pleasure.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh air, Wick.
Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.